Okay, so we continue now with software development methods. So it's more the social aspect now, how you can organize people to develop software. So there is several software development methods. We'll show like the big family of them. So the first one is what I call code and fix. And it's maybe what you do for a small project. So you just code. If there is some issue, you try to fix it. And there is no really some plan how you will develop your project. So of course, I don't say that this is a bad method. It's efficient for some small project. You can quickly code a few lines of code, test them, and fix them if they are not working. And then you add stuff as soon as it goes. I think it's easy to envision that for a big project, it's an issue. It starts as much as you have features, it starts to be more complicated to add new features, to find bugs, because you don't really have a plan when you start to develop your project. So it's working well for small project, as you may you are doing in your project, but it's not suitable for a very big project where you have many people involved in the development. So then you have two big family of software development methods. So the first one is engineering methodologies. So it's like engineering or plan-driven methodology. So this kind of methodology come from civil or mechanical engineering, where you will plan everything in advance. So like, for example, for a bridge, you will do the drawing, you will do the construction plan, you will do the task distribution among the worker, and then you finally do the construction. So we'll see some example of that. We'll talk about it just after. And we will see that there is another kind of methodologies. It is agile methodology. We heard a lot the word agile, but it's like a big family of methodology. And the idea of this method, it's a bit in opposition to this one, is to be more adaptive than predictive. So we see that this one, you predict everything in advance, but this other kind of methodology, you try more to adapt to different requirements or things like that. And the second thing we'll see that it's also more people-oriented rather than process-oriented. Here you really have to follow the plan. Here you give more freedom to people and try to let people be more creative and so on. So if we have a look at this engineering methodology, usually there is several of them, but one classical one is called the waterfall methodology. Because it goes like that. So you first have an analysis of all the requirements, then you design the method, then you create the code, then you do some integration of all the code from all the different people, then you test this code, and then you deploy it. And of course, when you detect an issue, you have to go back. You have to go backward, and sometimes it could be very, very time consuming. If you detect the issue, for example, that you didn't analyze properly the requirement when you are doing the test with the customer, for example, it's very an issue because you have to redo everything. So this engineering method were used a lot in the past for software development. And the idea is, in this method, you have a kind of separation between the design and the construction. So the design usually is the unpredictable part, which requires creative people to create the design. And on the other hand, you have the construction part that is very predictable because you just have to follow the plan, and which requires people with lower skill. So the good example is civil engineering, when you need, for example, to create a bridge. The construction is much bigger in cost and time than design. So you spend a lot of time in advance to design everything to be sure to not have any issue. And then you go to the construction step. But then now, if we are talking about software development, what is the design and what is the construction for software? So if some of you have some idea what we can think about design and construction. Yes?
designing the architecture of the software?
Like, yeah, design and construction, like. If
I don't get the question.
Like we see that
for design and construction.
In civil engineering, for example, when you're a bridge, you have a design phase, you build all the plan, and then you have the construction step. Where
you
build it.
The entities of the software, you define the...
Yes.
Maybe
so
if it's a modular software, we may define the client, server, how they interact, which technologies they use to interact.
Yeah. So it could be one way to see it. It's a bit like I put it in a simplified way, like the UML, the client architecture, the network architecture, this kind of thing as the design, and the coding is the construction. Like could be one way to see it. But I think another way to see it is more like creating the code is the design, because you are explaining what you want to do. And the compilation is really the construction, like you are creating the software in itself. And if we see, like, I don't say that there is one good, bad vision, but if you see it like that, you see that the construction is very quick and cheap, but the source code is usually requiring creative people and talented people. It, like, when we go to the coding step, we cannot just say code as it's planned, because it's almost impossible. Like, you have you need skills to do a proper code for your software. So it's here in this way. Why is this vision is maybe a bit closer to the reality? Because for the source code, when you want to create the code, you still need creative people and people with high skill. And this creative process of creating the code sometimes is also a bit unpredictable, because you will discover that you cannot do what you predict before. You need to find another way to do what you predict before, and then that's why we can ask the question: are the engineering methodology well adapted to software development? And the second question is software development predictable? There are several answers. Of course, yes, in some cases, if you are creating a NASA program to compute the trajectory of a spaceship, maybe it has to be predictable, because you don't want that the spaceship go in wrong direction. But usually, sometimes the software development is quite unpredictable, and especially, and even more for software that involve interaction with user. And you probably know a bit of that, because you did the different design class. There is several reasons for that. So the first one is that customers don't precisely know what they want at the beginning. Like, sometimes they have a rough idea, but in the details, they don't really know how to implement, how to interact with the software to achieve what they want to do. It's hard to evaluate the cost of different options. So when you're proposing different options to the customer, it's a bit hard to understand it will be easy or hard to do it. And it's also hard to estimate which feature will be useful for the user or not. And that's why more and more people think that the requirement should be flexible. It's not a good idea to define at the beginning a big plan for your software and just do it. It's better to be more iterative, and probably what you saw also in Wendy's class, how you can interact and design with the user. So to illustrate that, I have a video that I love. You will see, maybe some of you know this video. It's called The Expert. Did some of you know this video? No, you will see, I like it a lot. I will try to put sound, of course. Sorry. Can we put sound here? No, I will just, I think I have to put my speaker.
Our company has a new strategic initiative to increase market penetration.
Wait, I will. No, there is no. Anyway, I think you have. I don't know if it's French or English subtitle. I don't remember.
To share
this.
Oh.
sorry, oops. Okay, should be ready.
Our company has a new strategic initiative to increase market penetration, maximize brand loyalty, and enhance intangible assets. In pursuit of these objectives, we've started a new project for which we require 7 red lines. I understand your company can help us in this matter.
Of course. Walter here will be the project manager. Walter, we can do this, can't we?
Yes, of course. Anderson here is our expert in all matters related to the drawing of red lines. We've brought him along today to share his professional opinion.
Nice to meet you. Well, you all know me. This is Justine, our company's design specialist.
Hello.
We need you to draw 7 red lines, all of them strictly perpendicular, some with green ink and some with transparent. Can you do that?
No, I'm afraid...
Let's not rush into any hasty answers, Anderson. The task has been set and needs to be carried out. At the end of the day, you are an expert.
The term red line implies the color of the line to be red. To draw a red line with green ink is, well, if it's not exactly impossible, it's pretty close to being impossible.
What does that even mean? Impossible?
I mean, it is possible there are some people, say, suffering from color blindness, for whom the color of the lines doesn't really make a difference. But I'm quite sure that the target audience of your project doesn't consist solely of such people.
So in principle, this is possible.
I'll simplify. A line as such can be drawn with absolutely any ink, but if you want to get a red line, you need to use red ink.
What if we draw them with blue ink?
It still won't work. If you use blue ink, you'll get blue lines. And what exactly did you mean when you talked about the transparent ink?
How to better explain? I'm sure you know what transparent means.
Yes, I do.
And what a red line means. I hope I don't need to explain to you.
Of course not.
But you need to draw a red line with transparent ink.
Could you describe what you imagine the end result would look like?
Oh, come on, Anderson. What have we got here? Kindergarten.
No, I'm just trying to get
Let's not waste our time with these unproductive quarrels. The task has been set. The task is plain and clear. Now, if you have any specific questions, then go ahead.
You're the expert here.
All right, let's leave aside the color for the moment. You had something there also relating to perpendicularity.
7 lines, all strictly perpendicular.
To what?
To everything amongst themselves. I assumed you know what perpendicular lines are like.
Of course he does. He's an expert.
2 lines can be perpendicular. All 7 can't be simultaneously perpendicular to each other. I'll show you. This is a line, right?
Yes.
And another, is it perpendicular to the first line?
Well...
Yes, it is perpendicular.
Exactly.
Wait, I'm not done. And a third one, is it perpendicular to the first line? Yes, it is. But it doesn't cross the second line. They're both parallel. Not perpendicular.
Oh, suppose so.
There it is. 2 lines can be perpendicular.
Can I have the pen? How about this?
This is a triangle. It's definitely not perpendicular lines. And there are 3, not 7.
Why are they blue? Indeed, I wanted to ask that myself.
I have a blue pen with me. This was just a demonstration.
That's the problem. Your lines are blue. Draw them with red ink.
It won't solve the problem.
But how do you know before you've tried? Let's draw them with red ink, then let's see.
I don't have a red pen with me, but... I'm completely certain that with red ink, the result will still be the same.
Didn't you tell us earlier that you could only draw red lines with red ink? In fact, yes, I've written that down here. And now you want to draw them with blue ink. Do you want us to call these red lines?
I think I understand. You're not talking about the color now, right? You're talking about that, what do you call it?
Perpendicularity, yes!
That's it. Now you've confused everyone. So what exactly is stopping us from doing this?
Geometry.
Just ignore it.
We have a task. 7 red lines. It's not 20, it's just 7. Anderson, I understand you're a specialist of a narrow field. You don't see the overall picture. But surely it's not a difficult task to draw some 7 lines.
Exactly. Suggest a solution. Now, any fool can criticize. No offense. But you're an expert. You should know better.
Okay. Let me draw you 2 perfectly perpendicular red lines. And I will draw the rest with transparent ink. They'll be invisible, but I'll draw them.
Would this suit us? Yes, this will suit us. Yes, but at least a couple with green ink. Oh, and I have another question, if I may. Can you draw 1 of the lines in the form of a kitten?
What?
In the form of a kitten? Market research tells us our users like cute animals. It would be really great if we could...
No.
But why?
Look, I can, of course, draw you a cat. I'm no artist, but I can give it a try. But it won't be a line anymore. It'll be a cat. A line and a cat. These are 2 different things.
A kitten. Not a cat. But a kitten. They're little. Cute. Cuddly. Cats, on the other hand,
are... It won't make a difference.
Anderson, at least hear her out. She hasn't even finished speaking, and you're already saying no.
I got the idea. But it's impossible to draw a line in the form of a cat.
What about a bird?
So, where do we stop? What are we doing?
7 red lines, 2 with red ink, 2 with green ink, and the rest with transparent. Did I understand correctly?
Yes.
Excellent. In which case, that's everything, right?
Oh, I almost forgot. We also have a red balloon. Do you know if you could inflate it?
What do I have to do with balloons?
It's red.
Anderson, can you or can you not do this? A simple question.
As such, I can, of course, but...
Excellent. Organize a business trip. We'll cover the expenses, go over to their location, inflate the balloon. Well, this is very productive. Thank you all.
Can I ask you 1 more question, please? When you inflate the balloon, could you do it in the form of a kitten?
Of course I can. I can do anything. I can do absolutely anything. I'm an expert.
So of course it's a bit exaggerated, but sometimes I think I have friends working in software development company, and sometimes they told me that the meeting look a bit like that, and like, but I think it's not only the fault of the customer, but it's hard sometimes to express what they need and what they want. So the idea of this agile methodology is to deal with this unpredictable requirement. And to have more an iterative development process that will involve the customer at each iteration and try to help them to define what they need and what they want. And the idea also of this iterative process is that each iteration try to improve the organization of the team. And that's why we talk about self-adaptive process. So the second idea of this agile method is to consider the people from the team like effective team of developer, and it's not people that you can reemplace, like you don't consider developer as reemplaceable part, like you have 1 analyst, 1 coder, 1 tester, maybe 1 manager, and like if you are missing 1 tester, it's fine, you can take a new one and that's it. So the idea is to give more responsibility to these people that are professional and let them do the technical decision. And let them also evaluate the time that they will need to achieve some task. So you could have a look at what is called Agile Manifesto. So the Manifesto for Agile Development. So the idea is here sum up in 3, in 4 things. So the idea is to have more individual interaction over process and tool. to have more working software to do some demo and interact with customer than comprehensive documentation. Maybe it's better to have a working software than a big documentation that nobody will read anyway. It's better to collaborate with the customer to define what he wants instead of negotiating some contracts, as we saw in the video. And it's also interesting to be responsive to changes over just following a plan that is defined from the beginning. So I will show you, or maybe later. So this is one example of agile methodology. So the idea is to have some iteration. We will see that this iteration could have different name according to the exact method that you follow. But the idea is to have some iteration, and in each iteration, you define what you will achieve during this iteration. You do some detailed requirement. You detail the requirement that you need to do. You do some design and analysis. You do some implementation and testing. And of course, you check with a customer or people that if what you have developed is working or is suitable or not, and so on. And you iterate, and you can have many iteration steps like that. So there is a bunch of different agile methods. So I will not detail all of them, of course. I will give you an example with Scrum just later. And so there is a bunch of them. I don't want to go into detail of each one. So one well known that is extreme programming. So we will see a few stuff about that also. So the idea of extreme programming is to be some test-driven development. And so you first define the test that you want to do, and then you do the development. And the interesting thing that I will talk about just after is the pair programming. So you are not programming alone, you are programming in pair of people. So Scrum, I will give you the example also later. And there is a bunch of other, Crystal, a lot of open source process now are based on agile method, where you can distribute, when you have distributed contributor, and you can parallelize also debugging because you have many, many people working on the project. And yeah, I don't want to go into detail. So one interesting thing, I think, for the CICW class about this extreme programming is the pair programming. So I think it's quite interesting here because instead of being one people working in front of the computer, you will try to program in pair. And it's not in pair like that. You just have one and the other one is looking at you. It's more you are really doing it together. So one computer, two people. And of course, once will still drive because it will operate the mouse and the keyboard. But the other one is not on the side, like far away. It's really working with you. So one will drive and operate the mouse, the keyboard. It will type the syntax, do the semantic, try to implement the algorithm. And you will have a second one that is more what's called navigate, but that you will use more watch, learns stuff maybe. Ask, talk also with you, and make suggestions. Yes?
I'm asking, is pair programming done like Deezer in extreme programming?
Deezer?
No, I'm asking because I've seen also alternatives in which both are programming, and one is writing the test, and the other one is writing the software, and then they exchange phase.
Okay, this is not totally pair programming, but yeah, it's also a kind of collaboration. Yeah. I think an additional style of collaboration. But here the idea is like the two people are doing it together, really at the same time. And the good thing about that, so one is really focusing on typing the code. And the good thing about that is the other one could be there and have a higher level of abstraction. So he can think about the test and the technical task. He can also think about the time since the last commit, the quality of the algorithm, and try to, maybe one could be typing the algorithm, while the other one can be thinking, can we optimize this algorithm, and this kind of thing. And it improves, and he also think about the quality of the overall design. So the advantage of this pair programming is that you will improve, of course, the code quality because you have a better design, because someone is really thinking about the design while the other is typing. You have a fewer bugs because the one that is watching also can say, oh, why do you do that? It's weird. Oh, but you do a copy paste, but you forgot to change the variable, or this kind of thing. So this is one thing, but you have also some additional advantage. You can spread the knowledge among the team, because in some companies, the pairs will have to switch regularly. So then you can work on different parts of the project with some people, and then you can spread really the knowledge in the team. And you also spread the technical and conceptual knowledge, because maybe when you will work on some part of the project with your another guy, it will teach you stuff about server development or some language, and you will learn stuff. So it's also good to improve the skill of the people in the team. And the last advantage is also on social aspects. There is no loneliness. There is more conviviality, and you could have a better motivation in your team. But what about productivity? Because we think now you have two developers and they are doing the code only from like one developer. So you can think that there is a drop in productivity because you have two people working on the same thing. But of course, it will depend how you measure productivity. If just you compute the number of line of code producted, of course you have a drop in productivity. But if you evaluate the number of running and tested feature, there is not so much a drop in productivity. So on short term, productivity might decrease slightly, of course, because you have less people coding. And I think they consider that you have a drop in productivity about 15%. But on the other hand, on long term, productivity goes up because the code is better. And it's even better if you consider staff turnover, because you spread the knowledge among the team and you don't have issues. So in extreme programming, they talk about the truck number. So it's the number of people from the team that can be hit by a truck and the project still survive. So, and the idea, of course, is to have the truck number as big as the team. So it means that everybody in the team is knowledgeable about the full project, and the project can still continue to survive even if you have only one guy working on the project. So the pairing strategy could be very different. So in extreme programming, all production code is written by pairs, but maybe it's a bit extreme on the other side. And in a non-agile XP team, usually pairing is not used at all. But I think from my point of view, it could be good to find a trade-off between the two options. And for example, in some particular task, it's good to have some pair programming. For example, for monitoring new hires, programming extremely risky part of the code, start a new project when the design is totally new, when adopting a new technology, then it's good to do some pair programming. And maybe sometimes you can also go back to the standard programming thing for very standard tasks. You could have also a trade-off on rotation monthly or weekly. So you can spend a day or two doing some peer programming and the rest of the day doing some standard programming. And you could also adjust according to the developer. Sometimes developers prefer to work alone. Some prefer to work by pair. And you can also adapt to these preferences of developer. But I think time to time, it's good to do some peer programming. Even in your project, you will see that developing alone sometimes is not that good. And it's good sometimes to meet and work together on the project and try to, especially at the beginning of the project. So now I will detail a bit more in detail one example of agile method. So we'll talk about the Scrum agile method. So just to give you one example of this agile method with some of these rules. So we say that the agile methods are based on an iterative process, and here in Scrum, all iteration is called a sprint. And the idea of this sprint is to develop, that's why it's called sprint, as fast as possible, some features. So usually it takes about 1 month in a sprint. And the idea is to sprint and try to develop as much as possible features. So there is usually several people involved in a Scrum methodology. So you have a product owner. So the product owner is a single person that is responsible for the product vision. It will be the guy that will give the priority to some features. Oh, we'll see that we call it product backlog. So it's the log where you store all the features that you want to develop for your project. And it will be the guy that will give a priority to which feature is the more important to develop first, and so on. And it will also be the guy that will accept or reject the product increment. So when new features are developed, he will say if it's good or not, and if it has to be modified, or if it could be accepted like that. So this is the guy that makes the project move forward. Of course, then you have the team of developer. So the idea of the team of developer is self-organized. So they are free to distribute the task among themselves as they want. They negotiate some commitment with the product owner at the beginning of the sprint. So they say, we can do these three features, but not 4 and 5. So like, they really have to negotiate what they can do and try to assess what they want to do. They have some autonomy according to how they will reach a commitment. So this is like really them that decide how they can do for that. And of course, they have to collaborate among themselves. And maybe the last people, you can include also what they call a master, a Scrum master, that will facilitate the process. So it could be the guy, it's a bit like a manager, but more like a guy that will organize, it will prepare the meeting and this kind of thing. So the idea of the master is to facilitate the Scrum process. He tries to help also to resolve issue or conflict among the team. He tries to shield the team from external interference or distraction. So maybe it will be the guy that talk to the boss, to the customer, and try to avoid the developer team to be distracted in their work. But he has no management authority on the team. He's just here to try to help. So then you have these different things. So I talk about the product backlog. So the idea of the product backlog is just to have a big list of the feature, and you try to split each feature in an item in the list. And of course, the top item are very have a small granularity. So like here, it's a bit small, but you can say, for example, implement user logging, implement SSL connection, I think, and so on. And of course, the one at the bottom could be more vague, like implement the help for the help menu for the user, or like very big things that are still not very precise. So only one item at a time is a top priority, and this is the product owner that will organize this product backlog and put the higher priority at the top. So once you have that, you can start a new sprint. So the sprint goes like that. So first you start with a planning meeting at the beginning of the sprint. So it's here where you negotiate with the which product backlog item will be processed, so which feature you will implement during the process. Maybe you will have to break this item into a list of sprint tasks because they are still maybe a bit vague, so you need to define them more precisely. So it could be look a bit like that. So you choose, for example, we will, in the current sprint, we will implement these four features here, and then you spread it in 2 subtasks. So for implementing the user login, you need to do this 6 item to have the reset lost password functionality. You need to implement this 3 thing, this 5, sorry, this 5 thing, and so on. So the idea is really to negotiate which feature you will implement, and then define all the tasks you have to do to implement these features. So then you start to work on your project. So after the planning meeting, you start to work on the project. For that, you have a daily meeting. So the idea of this daily meeting is not to spend a lot of time in meeting, because maybe it happened to you, but you will see that it's even more important when you are in a company or thing like that. In some company, you can spend days in doing meetings, and it's not very productive. So here, the idea is to have some very quick meeting in the morning to try to don't spend days in meeting, but still synchronize among people. So the idea of these daily meetings, they always take place at the same time and at the same place. They are like around 15 minutes meeting, and they ask people, they are not sitting, people are not sitting. They ask people to stand up, and because they discover that if people are standing up during meeting, it's much more smaller than a meeting where people are sitting. So the idea of the meeting is to summarize the work of the previous day and the work of the day. So people say what they did the day before, they say what they will do this day, and they also try to discuss quickly the issues that they have. So in that case, they can use, they can maintain a task list, and they move the item between the items that are not started, the items that are in progress, and the items that are done. They can also list the issue and have the burden chart. So the burden chart is to try to assess the progress of the project. So the product owner also may attend to this meeting, but it's not mandatory. So the Spring backlog looks like that. So you have all the commitment item, so the features that you promise that you will implement. You have, and then you have all the tasks. So they could be split into three categories. So not started, in progress, and completed. And of course, the idea is at the end of the sprint, everything is in the completed column. So when you reach now the end of the sprint, you will have a meeting also, like what they call review meeting. So the idea of this review meeting is to demonstrate the working product increment to the product owner, but just to do a demo of the current system. The product owner will declare which items are considered as done and which are also considered as unfinished. So the unfinished one will return to the product backlog, and they will have to be achieved later. The master also can propose new items for the product backlog. So he can say, okay, well, we have implemented the user login, but we forgot to put something if the people forgot the password. So in that case, you can add some new item to try to improve the project. Then the last meeting is the retrospective meeting. So the review meeting is really try to review the development that has been done during the sprint. And the retrospective meeting is more try to review the organization of the team during the sprint. So the team will, during this meeting, will review its own process. It will also think about what they can do to adapt it for the future sprint. And of course, the manager have to avoid to manage the psychology safety of this meeting, to avoid fight between people, because this could happen, because say you didn't do that, or I did this thing alone, and blah blah blah. So yeah, the idea here is to try to have a positive meeting and not fight against each other. So the last thing, you could also have some backlog refinement meeting. So the idea, if you see that some feature or task are too large, you can, so it could be too large or poorly understood by the team, you could have some specific meeting to work on this particular item and try to refine them in smaller one. So here again, you will have a lot of feedback given to the team. So this feedback could take several forms. So that I show you here some quick examples. So you could have, for example, what they call wallboard here. So we have you have all the tasks, and you plan. I think here they are even planned according to the time of the day. So you need to do that this day to make some progress. There is another example here where you have all the feature and you can move. You have the subtask here for all feature and you can move them when they are done. Like they use a lot this kind of wallboard. So here is another example. You have I think the item here or the task to achieve, and then you have some specific icon to give some examples. So you have in progress, you have some this post-it. I think the star in when it's done. And like yes, each team has its own way to manage this this wallboard. But the idea is to see the progress of the implemented feature. And you can also have a digital version of that. So for example, here you have all the features that has here to do, in progress, and done. You see the people that are assigned to this subtask, and so on. And you'll see also what they call the burn down chart, so the thing that has been done, and you see what is the planning and what you have done. So we see here that they are quite late because they did not achieve enough task. So I think I have an example in video of one software to manage this Scrum process.
Jira Agile makes Agile easy for every team. Teams face challenges around getting visibility into their work and collaborating to complete work. Let's start at looking at Jira Agile for a Scrum software development team. To truly understand what the team can deliver in a sprint, the team will start by reviewing their past performance, as this allows the team to plan with confidence. When looking at the backlog, the team will select stories that deliver the most value to the customer at the end of the sprint, and the team will collaborate to gain a shared understanding of the story and to estimate that story. The team will then identify their sprint commitment and start the sprint. As the team works, they can easily update the board. They have traceability from every story to every commit. The team will track their progress during the sprint. Once they have completed the sprint, the team will start the retrospective, knowing exactly what got done and what didn't. We have now come full circle for a Scrum software development team. They are ready to do it all again and plan the next sprint. Kanban is for flow-based teams like support and operations. These teams start by visualizing their workflow, as this allows the team to stay in control. They can create any workflow that they want, and that workflow will map the columns on the board. We've got advanced teams covered too. For instance, swim lanes can be used to help the team manage their service level agreements. Team members can update issues easily while still on the board. Teams that focus on the flow of work can identify lead time and cycle time of issues and can identify outliers. They can also answer the question, how quickly can we get things done? Jira Agile and Kanban make an amazing difference to any flow-based team in an organization. Jira Agile has Scrum teams covered too. Try Jira Agile today and see how easy it is to adopt Agile, provide visibility for your organization, and collaborate to complete work.
So yeah, of course it was a commercial video, but it's one example of, yeah, there is many software, that try to help to organize this Scrum process. And I think they are quite useful because you can everybody can access to this information and you can reorganize it. And I don't know if you saw at the video, it could also be linked to the version control system, because then when you do some commit, you can tell to which tasks they are related and so on. So it can really help the organization of the development. So in conclusion of this class, so I think we saw that collaboration in software development is something necessary for big projects. Of course, you cannot develop very big software alone. But this collaboration is not obvious. You have some technical issues, but you also have some organizational or social aspects that you have to deal with. So we saw at the beginning of the class that version control is good for synchronizing different people working on the same project. It's good for saving the different version of the project and even to do some branching if you want to split work between developer or test a new version of the project. So I don't know if, I saw that not all of you use this kind of version control for software development. I think maybe not on the current project, but I really encourage you to try to use a version control. Of course, at the beginning, you will lose a bit of time to try to understand how it's work. But then for later, it's much, you will be much more efficient. It will also be much more safer because you will not lose your code. If you break something, you will be able to restore older version. And it's also very important for collaboration. And so the last thing we saw that continuous integration is also good to improve safety and efficiency because you can test all the time the current state of your project. So continuous integration maybe it's not for you because like it's a bit complicated to implement and to make it work when you are a student, but when you will see when you will work in companies, sometimes they have their own continuous integration system. And on the more social aspect, we saw that agile method could be a solution to organize a team. And the idea here is to, instead of follow the plan, is to have more adaptation to unpredictable requirement and try to collaborate with the customer to develop a new feature instead of trying to negotiate everything from the beginning. So I stopped here for today on the class. I will put the slide online and you have a lot of link related to this thing. And I think I stop here for today and I'm available to talk with you if you have some question about your project also. So I stay here, I think we still have a bit of time, so you can leave if you want, but if you want to talk about the project, you can come and talk to me also.